Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
In this special audio cast, let's talk about being queer, Catholic, and homeless. It'll be interesting, so sit back and...
1, 2, 3!
Listen.
If you're willing to talk, Father Leo is willing to listen. Get ready for a deliciously deep discussion of Shoot the Shiitake with Father Leo.
And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for a deep dish discussion as we engage a conversation with someone who is incredibly unique. You know, I'm going to set this all up for you. I try to interview people who are different from me. And while, you know, I try not to interview Catholics, I got to admit something. There's a lot of uniqueness in our Catholic faith, and this next interview with Kelly Cutler is no different. Let me just set this up for you. You're going to hear more about her directly, but she identifies as queer, and she is out on the streets marching in San Francisco, but not for the gay pride parade, but to help people out of homelessness. And she is one of the only people who I would consider as a community organizer, a protester. She wears a resist t-shirt, a hashtag resist t-shirt, but she's not annoying. And here's why. She actually does something with her kind of really unique attitude to bring about a positive change in herself and in others. And let me explain, she actually has become Catholic. And she now works as the human rights organizer for the Coalition of Homelessness in San Francisco. And so you're going to hear a very unique young woman's perspective. And I got to tell you, I learned a lot. And more importantly, we come to an understanding on how to disagree on just about everything, including my tweets, which you can follow, by the way, at Father Leo Feeds on Twitter and Instagram and on Facebook. But let me just introduce Kelly Cutler, and this special episode is brought to you by SoulCore, which is a movement that pairs core strengthening, stretching, and functional movement with prayers of the rosary, a sensory experience combining candlelight, music, scripture, and the movement to nourish body, mind, and soul while encouraging deeper reflection on the virtues of the rosary. SoulCore is not affiliated with other exercise disciplines like yoga or yoga poses or Sanskrit. It's something way deeper and something that truly brings healthiness to you. Learn more at soulcore.com, and we'll be back with more of my deep dish discussion with Kelly Cutler in just a moment here on shootheshiitake.com. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo. This next interview with Kelly Cutler, human rights organizer for the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco. We met on Twitter because she clearly disagrees with my politics, or so to speak. But more importantly, she's doing something that I'm incredibly interested in because, frankly, I find San Francisco an amazing place, but it has turned absolutely disgusting for me, in my opinion, the past few years, and I want to understand, getting deeper into it all. Oh, and by the way, she identifies as a queer. Oh, and by the way, she actually converted to Catholicism with a priest who is her exact opposite. She's never even met him. So let's welcome to the show Kelly Cutler. How's that for an intro?
That is a big intro there.
But that's exactly why I'm interviewing you, because I don't actually try to get into tiffs with people who disagree with me. I actually, on the internet, get more annoyed with people who say that they're Catholic, but they kind of want to tell me how to be a priest.
Uh-huh.
And that's not what you did. Do you remember how this even started off?
I don't remember which one I tweeted.
Because you follow me on Twitter. And do I follow you? I'll have to follow you.
You need to follow me.
You are nut cheese.
Nut cheese, which is
Twitter.
A vegan cheese. Yes.
Okay, it's a type of a vegan. You're not a vegan,
I'm not a vegan. I love vegan jokes, though.
Okay, so like which way? Like against people who eat meat or just jokes against vegans?
I don't know. I just find them in general
So let's
funny.
Describe where we are, Kelly. We are sitting kind of right in the Yerba Buena
mm-hmm.
Center. Totally built up. I've been here several times, mm-hmm. and every year it seems to grow and grow and grow.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in the Mission District, right across from where we are. I could look and I could see the steeple of St. Patrick's Church, which was an Irish church, now taken over by Filipinos.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable. And I'm talking to you, Kelly. We've met twice. Once several years ago, and now we reconnect, and you are pierced. You've got a black resist shirt on. She's got beads on her wrist with a little leather, and she's got a cap on. And in a way, you really identify as just, how shall I say this? You kind of epitomize, in a way, what some people might think as a liberal.
Oh, jeez.
I mean, I hate to say it because I'm trying to paint a picture. And this gives you a chance to be like, God, that's the stupidest, most arrogant, most rude thing I've ever heard.
I think that's usually when I comment back to one of your posts is when it's something like that.
Exactly. Go for it.
You know, part of it is that I'm not a Democrat or Republican.
Okay.
You know, I think conservative or liberal oftentimes is nonsense. When it comes to the work that I do, when it comes to homelessness.
Tell me about your work.
So I am a human rights organizer, the Coalition on Homelessness, and we focus on the policy side of homelessness because it's a major systemic issue. So it's not the charity side, the direct service. It's the much broader systemic issue.
Okay, so when we talk about homelessness as a problem, we're going to get a little bit into it.
Mm-hmm.
But what you do is you represent the people who are homeless. Tell me some of the reasons why people are homeless. And if you have any statistics for San Francisco, this is an incredibly wealthy city.
Mm-hmm.
Property is so freaking expensive.
Yeah.
And I think it has to do with policies. But and by the way, Nancy Pelosi's from Baltimore, but she annoys the F out of me, to be honest with you. When I kind of listen to her, do you like her?
You know, she's just another politician for me.
And so who are they to you?
politicians, you know, here we only have Democrats,
yep.
okay? And I've dealt with Democrats and Republicans. I go to the Capitol,
you know,
in our organizing work. And when it comes to poor and marginalized folks, it doesn't matter what party they're from.
Thank you. This is where we can find agreement.
Yeah.
Because right now there is a debate, and we actually talked about it on Twitter because I didn't want to get into it on Twitter. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
I really hate responding to it all. But there was a textbook, and I do remember it. There was a textbook that accused Donald Trump of being mentally unstable and his people who voted for him as being racist. And you said something like,
I was asking about
what's wrong with that?
No. I was asking for just more specifics, like what to be explained a little bit more, because I was wondering if it was around the systemic racism or, you know, what the, you know, when it comes to the president, anyone in politics that high up is struggling with some mental health issues in some way.
Totally. And especially in America, what's really interesting is that when you become at least that point of presidency, mm-hmm. there is no one who is going to be without corruption.
Oh, yeah.
And secondly, they are dealing with their own issues.
Mm-hmm.
No one gets to that point. And I also think that part of it is because the people who vote almost want a king or a queen. We almost coronate them rather than just duly elect them.
Actually, the thing that I liked about this last election,
mm-hmm.
there wasn't much to like.
Sure.
But the thing that I did like is that neither party seemed to really hold someone up on a pedestal as a saint.
Sure.
And
well, I don't think we should.
No, but that's usually the case where it's like people are getting so behind this, you know, this.
They've become a type of a god.
Yeah, this politician. And yep. I said, it's a politician. Yep. It's a, you know, you've got to.
And so let's actually talk about this, because the word politician and politics is actually rooted in the Latin polis, which means people. And this is what I wanted to actually talk with you about, because I can't stand politicians. And people are automatically going to think, I'm a Republican. They would be so incorrect. Just even based on our pre-interview, you're probably thinking, gosh, I had no idea Leo was more of a liberal than anything else. Because I'm more concerned with people.
Yeah.
And politics can't solve these problems.
Yeah.
People solve these problems. Let's talk about homelessness, because it's a big deal here.
Yeah.
Has it grown? You've been here for 20 years now?
Yes, almost. Yeah. Part of it, the labels, I think, are just often labels, where it's not really looking at the issue in a real way. It's just, you know, certain times where it's just things are to be putting people in different camps, oftentimes to be neglecting what the core issue is.
And so what are the core issues that have led to this homelessness that you have been able to at least surmise from your research as the human rights coordinator?
So a lot of it goes back to the late 70s, early 80s, when there was a major divestment from HUD housing, which is the Housing and Urban Development. Yes, the budget there. So it was around 80% that it was cut. And so that was the beginning of these massive holes within our safety net.
Okay.
Then there was also, when it comes to mental health facilities and different support in that way, you know, issues when it comes to incarceration or mass incarceration.
I'm going to kind of summarize it for some folks here. There was budget cuts that really couldn't sustain people. People who were benefiting off of, say, tax dollars, they no longer had it.
Yeah.
And now we're also dealing with mental health issues because a lot of hospitals don't provide these kind of services.
Well, they shut them down.
They shut them down.
They shut, you know, and some of them, it needed to be revamped. But the problem with the mental health system is that they switched over to privatization.
Okay.
So, and then, so folks would go into these private, you know, facilities, and then oftentimes they would get kicked out, and then they would end up on the street for many different reasons. Some things could be behavior, things that it wasn't a fitting environment for them, or they just didn't succeed there for some reason
So the economy, mental health, and then what about drugs and just addictions and substance abuse? Is that popping up on your scale?
I think that's an ongoing issue, period.
Okay.
Among housed and unhoused within our culture.
I mean, like, I know people who have been quote-unquote kicked out of their own home because of they just could not kick the habit.
I used to work at a rehab. And there were a lot of CEOs coming through.
Sure.
There was a lot of folks.
I saw those stories too.
Yeah.
And you yourself were homeless.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That was when I moved up to San Francisco and I needed to have a fresh start. I moved up here, moved in with a friend. Then he ended up getting sick.
Okay.
He got cancer and, you know, he's a veteran. You know, different life circumstances. And also the cost of housing here is really expensive.
So tell me about like a crappy apartment.
So right now,
So
I live in the Tenderloin. It's the best neighborhood in the city. It's a poor section of the city.
Totally.
But you walk down the street and people actually talk to you.
Sure.
It's, you know, it's amazing.
Because they're talking to themselves.
Well, and that's everywhere.
So,
people got
earbuds. How much is that?
So for a one bedroom with no frills, you know, nothing, right now is going for $3,200 a month.
I couldn't afford to live here.
Yeah.
And I have a professional-ish salary, even though I'm a priest.
Yeah.
But,
that's in the hood.
We're talking about trying to find some policies, and I know that we can kind of point fingers, and I think we do that quite a bit. But you said something in our pre-interview that there was a real difference between charity and social justice.
Yes.
And the role of the church.
There's actually the teaching when I was looking into Catholicism and learning about it.
Which is what we're going to talk about actually in our premium subscribers thing, because this story is wicked weird. Oh my God, you are a freak,
I know,
Kelly Cutler. You are such a weirdo. But
and
anyway,
it was not my plan. Oh,
and by the way, I met her twice and I'm calling her a freak.
Oh yeah, I embrace that fully.
totally embrace it. So there's a difference between charity and justice.
So if one of the things that I was thrilled to find was the Catholic social teachings when I was looking into Catholicism. And I actually bring this one in particular to City Hall because I'm explaining to like politicians or whoever the difference between charity and justice. And the church has the teachings of the 2 feet of love in action. Mm-hmm. So you've got these, the 2 feet, one of them is charity. One of them is justice.
Correct.
So the charity is the direct service and, you know, the...
Making sandwiches.
Yeah, making sandwiches.
Giving gift bags.
Yep, that stuff. The other is the justice side where, you know, for the major systemic issues.
So, which, do we do that well in the Catholic Church? Not so much? Tell me.
Well, not when it comes to homelessness.
Not when it comes to homelessness. And so homelessness is a big deal.
Yeah. And so, and another example is that there's a story about where there's this village and they've got a river there. And one day there's three folks floating down the river. You got a baby, you got someone who's dead, and you've got someone who's ill. And the community comes out and is like, oh my gosh, we need to help them. So they put the baby into, you know, foster care. They bury the dead and, you know, help the other person. So the next day, there's the same thing, three more people. They're like, oh my gosh, we need to help them. Then the very next day, the same thing. So they said, oh, we need to create a system to be able to help folks. So a hospital, you know, all these things. So that's charity. Justice is going up the river and stopping the people who are throwing them in the river.
Sure.
So that's the justice, is to be stopping it.
So your work right now is to look at policies?
Yes.
And what policies are there literally that can kind of curb, and I'm not saying eliminate, but curb the amount of homelessness? Every year that I come to San Fran, I see more and more people begging.
Yes.
And this is one of the wealthiest cities. Uh-huh. And you've got companies that are gajillions of dollars in the black. What is up with this?
Well, and actually, homelessness hasn't been growing here as much as it has in other cities.
Oh, really?
No.
Why do I always sense it, though?
Well, part of it is that San Francisco is so small. It's 7 miles by 7 miles.
And it's also, you can smell it.
It's very visible.
Yeah, it is very visible.
It's very visible.
It's very sensory.
And because we've also had so much development, so folks that we'd have encampments and people would stay under the radar now the way for their own safety.
Sure.
Or just, you know, to be out of the way. Now these areas have been developed, and so there's fewer and fewer places for folks to hide. So
and it's very obvious, too. Like, even though the grunge look is very obvious, you can tell if someone is grungy because they're being stylish or grungy because they haven't bathed in a few weeks.
Yeah.
So tell me about what some of these policies are that you would recommend and one that you actually have put forth.
So there's some things that housing rights are a huge piece of it. So where we saw mass evictions happening a number of years ago, as the big companies were coming in and they were bringing in employees, they needed housing for them.
Like Google, Uber, we're talking
Yahoo,
Twitter. Yep.
All of them, the ones that got the big tax cut, the Twitter tax cut.
Mm-hmm.
And so folks that were getting targeted for eviction, and a lot of them no-fault eviction, so we have Ellis eviction is one of them. Initially, we saw a whole bunch of seniors and people with disabilities were the initial big targets.
Okay.
And so folks that had had rent control for years, and this is, you know, their home.
So you can't afford it.
Yeah.
So what...
But
are
they had
do?
Rent control, so they were able to afford it.
Yeah, to pay for what they could. And you said something also in the pre-interview that every society can't be made up just of rich people.
Yes, and that's...
You need to have people who are doing all levels of jobs.
You need service jobs, you need...
So low-paying jobs and high-paying jobs.
And high-paying jobs for a healthy community.
Yep.
And so that's where, like, where the HUD funding, plays into that, is that so folks that are, for example, working 40 hours a week... should be able to pay for housing and to live.
Sure.
You know, you shouldn't have to, you know, work all these different jobs, you know, to do that. And so that would be to subsidize some of that for cost of housing.
So what did you do? We're going to take a little break because I want to get very specific into policies and how your guys are experts at this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to fix it. So when we come back, we're going to fix everything here in San Francisco with Kelly Cutler, of human rights organizer, Coalition on the Homelessness. We will be back in just a moment.
And we hope you're enjoying this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake with me, Father Leo. And for our premium subscribers, those who support us on Patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds, you're actually going to hear all about Kelly's conversion story and how she meets a priest online and is converted through their email exchanges, eventually getting a chance to meet this priest while in Rome. And her story is incredibly fascinating, shows how God is truly working and making us on the straight path, even though we're all still, to some degree, writing with very crooked lines. So if you want to support our efforts, and we definitely always need your support, simply go to patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. Please and thank you.
And we are back. Beautiful weather here in San Francisco. That's one thing that brings people out here is this weather. We're in Yerba Buena Center, right in the Tenderloin area.
This is South of Market.
This is South. Oh, Soma. This is Soma. Mm-hmm. My bad. Okay. I'm sorry. My geography is pretty bad. There are no cable cars here. I have to go
a block
up, and then I can catch it and do the Rice-A-Roni, mm-hmm. a San Francisco treat. So let's go back to the policies on homelessness. Mm-hmm. What have you guys done? I mean, are you just simply taking HUD money and just wasting it on your lavish lifestyle?
We don't accept any government funding.
Okay, I just want to set that up for you.
At all, because...
Because they're all politicians and crooks, but anyway.
Well, yeah, and also it censors you.
It
so,
does. How about church money?
We have received... That was the... has been the one grant that we still did receive was from CCHD, the Catholic Campaigns for Human Development.
Correct.
Particularly because pretty rare to be organizing people who are experiencing homelessness.
Sure.
And to be bringing folks to be speaking their own truth and coming in. And really, people experiencing homelessness are the experts on this issue.
Sure.
Because they,
you can speak to it. You have been homeless, mm-hmm. and now you work hand in hand with a lot of homeless people. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the policies that you've created? And then what I want to do is get practical. What can people actually do to help with it? Because we feel so disconnected. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, it's like giving a sandwich or giving a buck.
Yeah.
Is that even helping? You tell us. So tell us about the policy first.
Okay. The policy. So a big focus of the policy right now when it comes to organizers on homelessness, there is the housing piece, but that's actually because since it's become such a big issue, it's kind of separate groups that are organizing more focused on the housing. So for the advocates on homelessness are really focused on the criminalization of homelessness.
Okay.
Because people's mere existence is criminalized. So when we say anti-homeless laws, we're speaking about life-sustaining activities such as sitting, sleeping.
Yeah, people can get fined in this city for, like, sleeping on a corner.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, for sleeping in someone's doorway, you can get, like, $100 fine.
I mean, like, and these homeless people can't even pay for it in the first place.
Yeah, no, it makes no sense.
So, in other words, the city is losing money enforcing a policy that's not even working.
Yes.
So what do we do with people who are just, like, kind of loitering?
Well, what do we currently do? We tell folks to move along.
Okay.
They'll give them a citation. Well, we can actually be cheaper to help people, to house people.
Tell me what that looks like. Because, like, I remember going to an interviewer up in Norway and be like, hey, would you welcome an immigrant and all these things? And they'd be like, of course we would welcome them. He goes, well, here's one right here. His name is Bill. Mm-hmm. Will you take him into your home? He's like, oh, I can't. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you see, it's harder to put the rubber to the road.
Yes. So part of it is there's a lot of different pieces to this that are moving.
It.
One of them with the basic criminalization piece. For example, we for our shelter system here, just for the single adults, there's about 1,400 people on that single adult shelter wait list. But in the meantime, it's against the law to sit or lie down. Okay, which is, you know, it's like you constantly got to be moving along.
And so how does one help them then? Because, again, these policies are way beyond just a typical person. Yeah. Going busy throughout their day. How do you say, welcome into my home and have a seat?
Well, part of it is we can be doing, and that's the charity side of it.
That's the charity.
That's the charity side. Yep. So when it comes to the justice side, it's more about really organizing and learning the issues. And I would encourage folks to be looking for people within their own community that are organizing on the social justice side of homelessness.
Sure.
Because it's very different than...
So a church in Baltimore has actually opened up at one point their plaza, mm-hmm. which was covered with trees, and they basically made a homelessness camp. Mm-hmm. The city had to shut it down because there were literally rat infestations. It grew unbelievably. It was a health violation.
Did they fight it at all?
The church?
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay.
They couldn't do anything because they had no expertise to make sure that it was a sanitary place for even homeless people.
Yeah. And that's where there does need to be a balance on things. And that's where really with bringing the community together, people who maybe work in direct service could be very helpful in how to design a model for something that is going to be safe for everyone. Because really the focus is the safety for everyone.
Yeah. Okay. But you said something that was very key. Mm-hmm. First of all, let's not judge people. We need to get rid of the stigma of homelessness.
Yes.
Because we have even people who are working mm-hmm. who are still homeless.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, and they're living in their cars uh-huh. or they're cleaner looking.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not display all of the...
Like they're passing.
Yeah. Like they're just kind of going through. Exactly.
Yeah.
I look homeless right now, to be honest with you.
I'm saying anyone could be where it's changed a lot.
So let's get rid of the stigma.
Yeah.
policy-wise, I know that you put something together that would literally provide it. I think this is a fascinating statistic.
So this is for Prop C, the one we did. So what we did is we did a ballot measure. We came together and we put a ballot measure on the ballot to what it would do is there'd be a tax that was 0.5% tax after $50 million. Okay, it's a gross receipts tax. So if anything under $50 million, there's no tax on it. Only after. So if they get 51 million, it's just on that 1 million after 50 million.
How many companies actually get to that point of profit?
There's a lot here.
There's a lot in this city that reach over $50 million of.
This in the 0.5% tax over $50 million, that would bring in about $300 million a year.
Okay. And so your initiative passed, it was voted.
It was voted on.
And now you're getting sued because you put it together?
Yeah, of course we are. Because
by the same companies like Twitter.
Uh-huh. Who
are very righteous.
Those are the ones that are always we're going against. It was really unusual. We did have one, actually the largest employer in the city.
You can say his name.
With Mark Benioff at Salesforce.
So Mark Benioff is a good guy.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. He's a good
and
guy.
And he was just basically challenging other CEOs. Put your money where your mouth is.
And he has been for a while. Uh-huh. And when they opened up the Salesforce, they were doing that. It was an interfaith, like, blessing thing. And,
sure.
And Mark was up there, and he was talking about homelessness. And he was saying where it's a moral obligation. So now this dude's, like, on my radar. Because I'm like, oh, okay, I'm holding you to it. It's like,
so
you're speaking my language.
I'm going to accost you like a crazy lady that you are.
Oh, yeah. I'm like,
and has he been supportive of the coalition of homelessness?
Yes. He really, with our proposition.
Okay.
I think a big reason is because he thought it was good.
Okay.
Because
okay,
it didn't, but also it didn't come from politicians.
Yep.
And it came from the community.
So Prop C was one of them. It's a major success, but you still haven't gotten any money because you're getting sued.
Yes.
You're getting sued because you were asking companies to support the city that they are making money in.
Yeah.
Okay. This sounds.
Because some people.
This sounds unsurmountable. It's like, well, what the freak can we possibly do?
You got to keep fighting.
Okay, you have to keep fighting, and then that's about the Catholic Church, because we actually have actually done something about this. Like, what has been your experience? But you also critique the cathedral because of, like, the anti-peeing, anti-sitting, anti-cameras, anti-homeless architecture. Tell me about this.
Jeez. Yeah, that was a hot-button one. You know, I tried to warn them. Well,
you tried to warn the Catholic Church.
Yeah, I did. So I became Catholic.
Which is the weirdest thing, but you're going to hear about this for any of the premium subscribers, so you've got to support us for this kind of reason.
I was fighting that the whole way, you know.
Yeah, no, we're going to talk about it.
But so now the Catholics are stuck with me. But while I was doing that, it made, you know, in different ways, it made me look at things differently.
Sure.
And so one of the things in the work that I'm doing, I was working with the homeless czar at the time. So it's the city's point person on homelessness. Bevan Dufty, one politician that I actually love. He's amazing. So much respect for him. But I was there and I said, you know, I see the faith community is throwing down when it comes to charity. They're everywhere. It's like they love it. I said, we're the ones doing the social justice side of it. And that's when I realized that there aren't any faith-based groups organizing on the social justice side of homelessness in San Francisco. And really across the country, it's very rare.
But what does it look like, though? Does it look like just like you've got the Resist t-shirt on?
Yeah.
Does it look like just kind of, I don't know, having a march? Because those things drive me nuts.
Oh, I know. I can't stand them either. I don't like marches. Well,
why do you have what is a Resist shirt for you then? What does that mean?
It's really to be resisting hate. It's not this current thing with the Trump. It's not that. There's a long history.
So you and Trump are friends? Kidding.
Yeah. And, you know, for any of them, I'm like, ugh. But it's to be resisting, like, the status quo, to be resisting.
Yeah, it has turned into a little bit of a.
Yeah, you know.
Of a shiitake show.
Yeah, and I had some priests give me a hard time about it. I'm like, listen, dude, look at the history of social justice and change.
Listen, Dorothy Day has always been a pain in the butt to a lot of priests.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, the work of priest worker movement, which I'm in a way part of. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I need you to be very specific. Give me three things, if you can, that a Catholic who just sits in the pew listening to my show and be like, well, you know, you guys keep talking about it, but you tell me what I need to do.
There are groups. There's a group that it's across the United States called PICO.
PICO.
Okay. I don't know if it's an acronym, but if you look it up,
everything's an acronym in the Catholic Church.
Yeah. This one is an interfaith, but they're really focused on organizing and on social justice.
Okay. But what do they do?
There's a lot of different levels. It's not just protesting. It's working on policy. It's working on, you know, different legislation. It's education. It's bringing the community together to create
again,
a plan.
So, but a person who's got a full-time job, they're taking care of their own kids.
Yes.
And they have a right to do that, but they want to get involved what are they going to do?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I'm saying that's
giving
just...
money, isn't that good enough in a way?
Well, it depends. Actually, if you're giving money is a good thing. Usually folks will give it, you know, to the charity. There's the justice side of it. But there are people that are organizing on this. But with PICO and the groups that are focused on organizing, that understand community organizing and do it with, like, interfaith groups, aren't necessarily organizing on homelessness.
Sure. When I hear community organizing, mm-hmm. I think of people who honestly just like to create tension and problems. Now hear me out. Hear me out.
Yeah, I'm listening.
It is because they just want to basically disrupt what other people are doing if they might be successful. Now, there is a positive side to community organizing, but sometimes we only see the worst of it, just the disruption of societal living.
Okay.
But there has got to be a positive side. Tell me what are one of the ways, and believe me, I'm asking because
I know
that you know this.
That's a pretty funny take on it, though.
Stereotype.
Yeah.
I mean, look. Barack Obama was a community organizer, and then he becomes a high elected official.
Yeah.
Now he was president.
Yeah.
You know? But what did they do? What did they actually do? Well, they pulled resources together,
mm-hmm.
or at least they try to determine what the resources are, try to find out what the problems are,
mm-hmm.
and then just try to be practical and answer them. Is that what the community organizing does?
That really is what you do.
That's what it should be.
And that's where...
But it annoys me that it has become political.
So, well, there's politics involved in all of it, but when it comes to... The reason they're not doing homelessness,
mm-hmm.
okay, the faith communities, because they use the Sal Alinsky model, you know, people have different thoughts about that. But
I don't know
but,
who that is.
Well, it doesn't matter. It
doesn't matter. Okay.
But what it
you
is...
You just wanted to show off.
No, I'm saying some people feel really strongly about it, and I'm like, whatever.
Anyway.
But what it is that they bring folks together, let's say at a parish, okay, they bring them together and they say, what are the issues, okay? Well, people who are experiencing homelessness are marginalized from faith communities or seen as a recipient of charity, not as a community member.
Sure.
So this voice isn't being heard, and so that's why they're not organizing on this. This is
so
the only thing
let's
I've
get
been
practical.
Able to come
like
to.
We've got a bunch of Catholics listening to all of this right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what they need to do is literally say, hey, you know what? I have got a spare private bedroom,
mm-hmm.
and it can house maybe two people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like right off the top of my head here.
Yeah.
Maybe our parish can sponsor
mm-hmm.
two homeless people, and we can also provide some sort of job training for them. And maybe if there's mental health issues, maybe mm-hmm. we can sponsor some of them to go mm-hmm. into some sort of program. Is that reasonable?
Yes.
Have you even heard it being done?
Yes, I have. And actually, that is the charity side. That's a little bit different. One of the things, so I'm a parishioner at St. Dominic's here.
Mm-hmm.
So the Dominicans are stuck with me. And actually, I go to Franciscan, too, to balance it out.
Oh, you go.
Then I don't strangle Dominicans. Because
I'd
strangle Dominicans if I didn't get a little Franciscan. But what they've actually been doing a lot, because they saw the need in their community, and they've created space where people can get showers and things like this.
Sure.
And
then but that's just the charity side.
That is the charity side.
But there's more to it, you're saying, and I'm still kind of delusional as to what the policy sides are, the justice.
Part of what folks could do within their community is to be going to these community organizing meetings for the faith communities like PICO.
Okay.
And to be talking about homelessness, to be bringing this, to be pushing this on the radar.
But after a while, isn't talk cheap?
Of course. Yeah. But they're not doing it. They're not doing it at all. So it needs
they're not
to
even
be,
talking about
it's
it.
It's not being brought up as an issue. But really what folks need to be doing is also asking the experts, people who are experiencing homelessness, about what they, you know, need to be doing.
So the experts are the people who are homeless.
Yes.
And listen, I have made mm-hmm. it a point, literally, to just talk to homeless people, and they don't even know some of the answers. So how is that going to help?
No, because it's a major... Because it's a major issue.
But people like you...
Yes.
I think... How about this?
Yeah.
Can people just support you and feel good about themselves?
Sure.
Because look, I can honestly say that there are going to be people, even me, I care tremendously about it. I would welcome them into my home,
mm-hmm.
but I can't take that risk as a Catholic priest.
There's some folks that you would lose your housing if you brought people in.
Believe me.
Like, there's
many
reasons.
I have actually tried to open up my garage on mm-hmm. the coldest of nights so that I could provide room for somebody. Because as a priest, I couldn't even have them in my home.
We do need to be opening up our churches more for...
But they stink. Now, that's a stigma, but that's... I just want to let people know, too, that even rich people can have body odor, all right? So it has nothing to do with that. But there is a unique kind of challenge in dealing with homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we get past that? Well, if anything.
We need to give folks showers. Opportunity, you know, for showers. That's one of the things at my parish where they...
But that's
they
the charity get, side.
That is the charity side. But then also the other side of it is when it comes to how people vote. And I'm not talking politicians. I'm talking about looking at the issues and really looking at, not just listening to what, you know, someone with some platform says, but really digging into what the different things you're voting on. Because some people go and they don't know.
They're clueless. And I mean, someone can easily stereotype you as they could stereotype me and be like, oh my gosh, there's going to be those people, the Antifa in Portland, you know, but you're not that.
No. I'm a Catholic anarchist.
I don't even know what a Catholic anarchist, but we are going to explain that in our premium subscribe interview, which is serious stuff here because...
It's really simple. That just goes into the teachings of Jesus. That's frankly what it is.
So give me one more thing that someone can do besides provide showers, provide charity, provide money to support the coalition of homelessness.
I think part of it is also to be educating yourself.
Okay. And that's justicide? That's the social
I'm saying justice. That can actually make a huge impact because there's people think that they know about homelessness, but the level of awareness is stunningly low.
Mm-hmm.
So to start stripping away the different myths about like homelessness is a choice, like learning more about it changes people. And also having an encounter with people and listening.
Sure.
But to really be challenging the status quo of like what you read in media or different talking points, because so much of it is nonsense.
And everyone who is incredibly involved in talking points are people who are truly dumb, in my opinion. I can't stand talking points anymore.
Yeah, well, folks, you know, they've got an agenda. When it comes to homelessness, even, you know, the most, you know, folks are so progressive or whatever.
Oh,
when you're talking about poor and marginalized communities, then it's always really challenging. So, you know, no matter where people are, it's like we often tick everyone off.
Last question, because I've got to bring it to a close. And I could talk to you for hours on this topic. And we're going to talk a little bit more again for our premium subscribers, hearing more about Kelly Cutler's conversion from...
Nothing.
I mean, nothing. But you were an annoyed kind of Christian who just kind of didn't like it. You become Catholic.
Yeah, I was done with it.
You were done
a
with
while
religion.
Ago.
But then you identify as queer, not lesbian. Boy, I kind of screwed that up.
No, that's fine too. You know, I don't really any of the
you're
labels.
You're so
like,
weird.
Whatever.
You are so incredibly weird.
I'm like, I'm a Kelly. That's
and that's where we're going to actually hear a little bit more about your personal story. But I do want to appreciate, express appreciation for the work that you do. I still will be very honest, I'm struggling between finding the difference between the charity and the justice, and more importantly, how justice does anything. Like, I could educate myself to the nth degree, but what exactly would the justice part be? That's going to be left for me to reflect on in my carry-out order when we return. But last question for you, Kelly. Simply this. We've met for maybe a total of 4 hours in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
We've exchanged witty banter on Twitter. How can I be a good priest for you?
That's an interesting question. Asking questions. And so not just listening with an open mind, but to be questioning with an open mind. And challenging me. I like it when priests challenge me in a respectful way. Because I'll challenge right back. But, you know, it's not just one-sided. But I appreciate that because then it's showing, you know, that you care enough to challenge.
And that's why I invited you not only to lunch, but to shoot the shiitake with me when we return. My carryout order, how did this conversation affect me? What did I actually learn from all of this? And how am I going to be someone who's going to be willing to question authority, but more importantly, quest the author so that we can try to figure out how to provide for people who deserves a home. We'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to Shoot the Shiitake with me, your host, Father Leo, for my carryout order after a very unique deep dish discussion with Kelly Cutler. I want to just applaud her bravery for wanting to come on the show with me. And she really has, in a sense, broken a lot of stereotypes and a lot of labels. You know, you take a look at Kelly and she looks like a typical San Francisco liberal lesbian.
just to put it out there. And I told her this to her face, you know. I mean, she was wearing a black Resist t-shirt. She had her little spiritual beads. I don't think they were rosary hanging on her wrist. She was tattooed. She was definitely pierced. She had a little, you know, page boy, newsboy cap on. And yet, I got to admit, she's one of the sweetest people I know. And so breaking stereotypes is exactly what this show is all about. We cannot put labels on people and assume the worst of them because of that label. I think labels are very dangerous because you could label me, clearly. Some people have. In fact, when I came back from Rome to the Archdiocese of Baltimore as a priest, I'm now a priest of a secular institute, but when I was a priest in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, I was labeled as a conservative simply because I studied in Rome. And then several years later, when I was actually asked to teach at Mount St. Mary's University and Seminary, I was a little too liberal for some of those students. It's kind of frustrating because these labels don't do anything but hurt people and honestly limit your mind. So I don't like to label people, but I was using stereotypes to describe my experience and interaction with Kelly because, again, I knew her. I met her once for a couple hours when I was in San Francisco a few years back. And this is only my second time meeting her. And we spent like, what, just a few hours hanging out together. And I see her as a woman just like everyone else in our Catholic congregations, struggling to make sense of it all while trying to do your best. But most importantly, her fix for her reasoning for becoming Catholic. And that's why I encourage you to be a Patreon subscriber because you get a chance to hear Kelly's amazing story. It's all about the Eucharist. Really, that's what it's all about. But anyway, but for my carryout order, let me just get to some things here. Because as I was reflecting and re-listening to this, what I would call pretty amazing interview, I mean, not because of my questions, but because of her responses. First of all, just I got to stop labeling people in my mind. That creates prejudice, and it's not good for the soul. It's not good for my mind. And I honestly don't do it, which is one of the reasons why I'm doing this show in the first place, to help people get over our prejudgments and the labels that we have and imposing on other people. Also, I love the fact that she's very well read on the church's social teachings. She makes the distinction between charity and social justice. And she gives that great analogy. We can care for the people who are floating down that river. But what we need to do at some point is make our way down that river or across that street or across the aisle or across those tracks and find out why they're getting thrown in the river in the first place. You know, I mean, that was the example that she used, and I'm glad that she used it because what we've got to do is get to the root of homelessness. So you all thought that I was just going to talk about gay pride and, you know, because I kind of set it up that way. No, because let's just admit it. The gay pride people are on the streets, but I also think in a way they're just trying to find a home for themselves so that they can express who they are. And maybe it's not going to be in your home, but the fact is they take to the streets for that reason. But really what this whole thing was about homelessness and finding a home for people who do belong. And we know that homelessness has many, many issues and problems. And so here's the big thing for me, it was education. You know, when you take a look at homelessness or a homeless person, and let's just admit, if you live in the city, you're going to experience it. I live in downtown Baltimore City, and I can't walk four blocks without encountering a handful of homeless people. No, excuse me. I can't walk one block and not see homeless people. And what do I do about it? Well, there's a lot that I try to do, which is the charity side. But there is more that I can do, and that is the justice side. And while justice is sometimes beyond my pay grade, because I can't always affect the laws, I can at least learn about the laws from the people who are experiencing homelessness. In other words, get to know some of them. And so, you know, I think the big takeaway for me was just being educated in people's experience of homelessness. My sister was homeless at one point, in part by her choice, because she made some stupid decisions growing up as a kid. you know, growing up as a teenager, rebellious young woman. And she found herself, quote unquote, homeless. That is, living out of her car for a few days, or even like maybe a couple weeks, I think. I mean, it was a little above me because I was still so young. And of course, my parents' favorite child. But, you know, I'm kidding. But just, you know, knowing that my sister experienced homelessness and also knowing that to some degree, I've met many homeless people who I wouldn't even know were homeless by my work in food shelters, when I used to do some work in food shelters. You know, like, so you just see that education is not something that you experience out of a book, but from the relationships that you get in talking with people who are homeless. And so it's a very difficult thing because, you know, to deal with, because there are so many issues, and I'm not going to say that we're going to solve all of them. But I think justice demands that we learn a little bit more about homelessness, and hopefully from experts like Kelly, who was homeless herself and can offer a lot of perspective, or from someone who is homeless now. You know, recently I had my team of people, bring some of their friends, and we literally just made, I don't know, several dozens of sandwiches and just bagged them up with some bottles of water and some sort of like snack, as well as some toiletries. And we put them all together and I sent them all out, including myself. I just started hand delivering these sandwiches, and I made sure that, you know, these young people who were delivering these sandwiches also had a chance to talk to some of them. And that was a form of education that developed compassion. You know, and so I think that's a big deal. Another takeaway that I got from Kelly was how she talked about a healthy society requires all types of jobs, all types of jobs. And this was kind of striking to me because I think sometimes a certain political party, I will just say it, Democrats, want to have jobs that are very high paying. But the fact is you can't have high paying jobs for low quality, various types of service. I think we need a dignified pay wage, you know, a minimum wage. I do think that $15 is not that big of a deal for a minimum. In fact, anyone who comes in entry level with my organization will make definitely $15 off the bat, even for a part-time job. But I think that when she mentions that a healthy society requires, you know, all types of employment, I just realize that a lot of people might feel bad because they don't make as much as the other. But that's where I think we as a Catholic Church need to show that work is dignity and dignified, no matter how much or how little you make. And what we've got to do is create opportunities for different levels of housing, each still within their own dignity. So I'm going to take in case my own neighborhood. I live in a mixed income neighborhood, and I live with people who make a very decent salary, and they live in professional homes. And yet my neighbor also lives in a professional-ish home, but for lower income housing. But it doesn't look like the ghetto or the projects. It just doesn't have all of the quote-unquote amenities that I have. Like, they don't have either enough of that I would have because I live in a professional home. And I would not even qualify to live in one of those homes because I make a little too much money than that house, that low housing cost would allow me to. They don't have a garage, for example. They don't have a very small patio. And when I say a small patio, my patio is like 3 by 5 feet. Okay, so it's pretty small. I live in the city. But there's different levels of jobs and income. That's just going to be part of life. What we need to do is show that there is dignity in picking up trash. And so, like, I really respect some of these coalition movements in San Francisco that are providing, you know, like newspaper. They're selling newspapers and they're providing opportunities for homeless people to make a little bit of money with a unique type of job. I wish they would actually just pay the homeless people to clean up the streets. That might actually be something positive. Anyway, I didn't actually get to the question about what Kelly did when she actually warned the Catholic Church about cameras, because that actually created some things. But basically, churches in San Francisco started putting up cameras all over the place to deter people from sleeping on their doorposts, you know, underneath their doorposts. And Kelly kind of discouraged all of that, but the fact is they needed to do it because people literally were just peeing in the corners of the church's doors when the church wasn't occupied. And so she mentioned how the churches should open their buildings up for, you know, showers and beds and resting and sleeping. And I know, like, if you go to Baltimore City, there are going to be some churches that have their doors closed completely. I know that the Basilica, for example, in Baltimore, you'll definitely see some homeless people on occasion just sitting in the pews and sleeping, you know, and that was just kind of like their way of opening it up. I don't know if I like that or not. I still need to be educated in that, but I can certainly say this. A church is not a place where we can just simply house homelessness, but it has to have a place that creates comfort and consolation for people who are experiencing challenges. I need to be better educated in what that balance looked like. And if there are any priests or anyone listening to this show right now who can actually get on my show and interview with me on how your parish is striking a balance to support homelessness, to make sure that the church's doors are open to helping the homeless, I would love to hear more about that. But I think my greatest takeaway from Kelly is just this whole need once again to talk. You know, she said, the one thing that I can do is ask her questions and to challenge her respectfully. But I think she does the same for me. And I think that our friendship, and yeah, I can say it, the next time I go to San Fran, you better believe I'm going to connect with Kelly and we're going to have a great time talking, disagreeing, completely disagreeing on many things, but enjoying each other's company and respecting one another and our different opinions of each other. You know, I think that's the whole point. She's not militant. I'm not militant. She's strong opinioned. I'm strong opinioned. But we also have a common belief in Jesus Christ, who teaches us one thing. He loved homeless people. He, in fact, encourages us to do something about that. Some of the greatest saints became saints just because they opened their hearts and their doors to people in need. And I think if there's one thing that we need to be educated on the most, and this is my carry-out order based on my experience of Kelly Cutler, is that I have to learn more about how to make the corporal works of mercy a reality in my life. That really, for me, is the greatest takeaway ever. I want you to learn more about Kelly Cutler and the human rights organizing that she does for the Coalition of Homelessness. If you want to make a donation, I'm sure they'll take it. Coalition of Homelessness in San Francisco. And this special episode of Shoot the Shiitake was brought to you by SoulCore, which is way more than just simply exercise. It is literally attuning your spirit to your body in an exercise of both, so that you can truly be healthy body, mind, and soul. You can learn more at SoulCore. And if you enjoyed this episode, and I sure hope you did, please consider supporting our efforts of Plating Grace by going to Patreon at FatherLeoFeeds.com. And you can make a donation of different tiers, and every one of these offers something unique, from advertising to a little gift that you get from some of my merchandise. Or if you're one of those big hitting donors, I come to your home and I cook a special meal with you and 10 of your guests, as well as bringing my team of ex-convicts and culinarians, and we tell an amazing story while serving you amazing food. And by the way, if you want to learn more about all of this stuff, all you've got to do is just be sure to sign up for my free weekly email blasts at FatherLeoFeeds.com, where you can also find the link to support us on Patreon.com/FatherLeoFeeds. So between now and the next time that we shoot the shiitake, I hope that you share this message and this story with your family, friends, pastors, and parishioners. Get them to like us on any of their major platforms for podcasts. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
Hello. This is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.